Welcome to Policy Outsider, presented by the Rockefeller Institute of Government. I'm Joel Tirado. Jessica Scarsella Spanton was 21 when she first served as executive director of the Democratic Party on Staten Island. Now she's serving as a freshman senator in the New York State Legislature, representing New York's 23rd District, which covers the north and east shores of Staten Island and southern Brooklyn. As a mother of two and wife to a disabled combat veteran, she brings a unique and fresh perspective to the state Senate. On this episode of Policy Outsider, Rockefeller Institute President Bob Begna speaks with Senator Scarsella Spanton about her road to the Senate, how she approaches being a public servant and legislator, and what she's proud of in her first year as an elected official. That conversation is up next.
I'm Bob Begna, president of the Rockefeller Institute of Government. We're here today to talk to Senator Jessica Scarsella Spanton. And this is the first in a series that we're trying to do with I know the senator's been here for a while, but relatively new folks who have entered the legislature, and give them a place and a forum to talk about what interests them, what's important in their district, and what's important on the state agenda. And I think oftentimes we don't hear enough from newly elected legislators, so we wanted to provide that place for them to talk about. So, Senator, it's great that you're here. And why don't you talk a little about yourself and your background, and then we could jump into some questions maybe.
Of course, it's great to be here, and thank you so much for having me on today. On my background, I am born and raised Staten Islander. I actually started back in college, was going to school for nursing originally. And in 2008, like many young people, I got the political bug. So I did an internship for the New York State Assembly. I worked for a local assemblywoman, and I was, especially in the assembly at that time, I was the only staffer in her Albany office. So I was able to learn more than I think I ever would have been able to in like a higher up office or anything like that. She ended up hiring me as her legislative director. And one of the bills that I was really proud of that we worked on was, I met all these families who had, you know, tragically suffered from the loss of having a stillborn baby. And at the time in New York State, you were mandated to get a death certificate, but you couldn't have any recognition of the birth. So we pushed for having a certificate of birth resulting in stillbirth. And I was a very precocious young intern. I was 19 years old. And I just really got to know these families well. And even then, it was when social media was kind of on the cusp still. And I was utilizing social media at the time to find families from all over New York State to reach out to their own elected officials, get them to sign on. I personally knocked on, I think, every single door myself in the LOB for all these members. And we got the bill from 22 sponsors to 148 out of the 150 sponsors. So, and it still didn't pass. So it was a very interesting learning lesson. Yes. So there was, you know, one or two people who weren't supportive of it. And it didn't pass that first year, but we kept pushing. You know, we made some amendments and we were able to get it passed. It got signed into law the year after she lost. So it was a very hard start in politics and government for me. But it left a really lasting impact that you meet so many wonderful people. And, you know, what I love about this job is that you can learn about so many different things. I didn't know that I was 19, I was young, and I didn't know that the passion I have for families, children, mothers, especially, was going to just be a thread that followed me throughout my entire career. So fast forward, she loses, I'm sad. And I ended up working for the Democratic Party on Staten Island. I was the executive director. And there I was really...
How old were you when you did
I that? Was 21 when I started as the executive director of the party. And it's wild to think about that. And like, I think about how many years I've been doing this now. But it was really, you know, I really credit that internship. And that's why we have a massive intern program in my office now. Because I always tell everyone, I started as an intern and you don't know what you don't know, right? So when I started, I thought that I was going to do this for fun and go back to nursing eventually. But here I am. So yeah, it was a very interesting time.
I hope you got a Penn certificate for that, an inside thing for that first bill.
Believe it or not, I don't have a Penn certificate for that. And I really should get one.
You should. For those who don't know what a Penn certificate is, it's kind of a laminated copy of the legislation with a pen next to it that was supposedly used to sign the bill into law.
Supposedly.
I'm never sure that's really true, but, you know, whatever. No, I also started as a Senate fellow, so I understand the experience. And I think once you get hooked, it is something that, you know, you find yourself spending more and more time on. But
yeah.
Now that you've been in office for a little bit more than a year, how would you, you know, describe your day? What are the kind of aspects of life as an elected official that define what you're doing?
Of course. So, you know, I am very familiar with the needs of Staten Island and Southern Brooklyn. Before I got elected, I worked for Senator Diane Savino, who was my predecessor. She always wanted me to run for office, and I would tell her, I'd rather eat glass. Thank you. I'm a background person. Then I got a job at the MTA because I knew she was leaving, and I was bored to death, and I missed my job. So I decided to run. And I haven't regretted it for a single second since, you know, I'm a mom. My kids are 10 and 7 now. But when I decided to run, they were just turning 8. I actually announced on my daughter's 8th birthday, and my son at the time was 5. So it's a really big difference. And one of the greatest things that I have is the ability to incorporate my family into a lot of what I do. So, you know, depending on whether it's an Albany day or a district day, you know, on the district days, I'm able to get them on the bus and, you know, head over to my office. I spend actually, believe it or not, very little time in my office because I'm a big believer that you should be out in the community. You should be meeting people where they're at. And, you know, so I have gone to almost every school in the district. I meet with students. I meet with parents. We go to churches, to synagogues, to mosques. We go to all the NYCHA facilities, and our office hosts mobile offices across the entire district. Because one of the things that really stuck with me was during the pandemic, nobody thought to reach out to their elected officials. And we were able to provide a tremendous amount of help, whether it was an unemployment issue, a vaccine appointment. We actually started a registry in Senator Savino's office as people were calling, they couldn't get an appointment. And I was, you know, you would beg, borrow, and steal for a vaccine appointment. So I would call Rumsey and be like, can I have, you know, 5 appointments? And I would tell my constituents, you know, there's only, you know, you're going to have to go whenever I tell you. And I would call Project Hospitality or, you know, Coney Island Hospital. So with that, we were able to get over 1,000 people their vaccine appointment. I would be up sometimes with a laptop, an iPad, and my cell phone at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning booking these appointments because they would come and go. And, you know, so many people did not realize that their elected officials could be helpful. So, you know, we had a really robust intern program, and we started calling into, you know, seniors, whoever was eligible for the vaccine. And I've carried that with me to that experience with me to my office today. So we constantly have, I think we have about 10 mobile offices on each side of the bridge every single week. And, you know, I'm really proud of the team that we have as well. We have an amazing team, and we spend a lot of time out and about in the community, just talking to people. Cause you have to talk to people to get the ideas and get a real feel for what people care about. And then of course, when I'm up in Albany, and you know, it's, you know how Albany is. It's chaos. And we have so many different meetings. We're always trying to make sure that we're on top of all the legislative priorities of different advocacy groups, unions, our own legislation, bills that, you know, our constituents are calling in about. So it's a lot, but it's very, very fulfilling. And it's truly been like the honor of my lifetime to do it on this side. And I joke, you know, as a staffer in my soul forever, I said, it's actually a lot easier on this side. You know, when you have a good team, you're showing up to things. I'm like, wow, I used to be up till 3 in the morning planning something like this. And now I'm just showing up here, shaking hands, talking to people.
It is interesting. You know, I think a lot of books are going to get written about how people use the COVID experience to dictate then how they're going to in the future, right?
Yeah.
How they're going to approach their job, how they're going to do those things. I think it's interesting you said that. In your first years now, you've already touched on this a little bit, but can you talk about things from now that you're there in that elected spot, what you're most proud of?
Of course. So there's a couple of things. I'm really proud of the work that we're doing for veterans. I chair the Veterans Homeland Security and Military Affairs Committee. So, you know, our veterans have, you know, they deserve so much. And we, you know, we really try to keep an eye on the things that are actually going to help them. You know, we have a monthly call with the Department of Veterans Services to see what they could be doing better. But I know this from my own experience. My husband is a disabled combat veteran, and it was very difficult to get him to go to the VA to seek help. And when we first moved back from Colorado, that's where he was stationed, it was really difficult to navigate the website and find out, you know, what resources were available, driving somebody to the VA, you know, is there housing resources, school, you know, school resources, whatever the case may be. So one of the bills that I'm working on, and we finally got a fiscal note for what the cost would be from DVS, is to create a registry that DVS would kind of run and operate. Because what I've been frustrated by is learning about all the resources, not just for veterans, but for families as well, because families are often very impacted by this. And the driver of, you know, if a veteran's in need of help, the family is the one who really is pushing. And I've been frustrated because I've learned about all these different resources that New York State has being on this side of the desk, as opposed to, you know, sitting on my laptop at home at my kitchen table trying to find stuff. And I'm working, I have legislation that would require DVS to have a registry of companies that are hiring veterans. So, you know, working with the Department of Labor to give that information over to DVS so that we have a better idea of what companies are looking to hire veterans, because a lot of companies are hiring veterans, and not just veterans, but military spouses as well. We are trying to work with the DMV so that they can give DVS that information. So a veteran returns home from getting out of the military service, and they can get like a welcome packet, you know, welcome to New York. You know, these are the resources that are available to you. You should reach out to your local VA. So I just think that we can be doing a much better job. And, you know, I'm going to continue pushing that registry. But that's something that I'm really proud of, is the work that we're doing with veterans and making sure that they have everything they need, but especially their families, because I feel like that's something that's left out of the equation when we talk about this stuff.
Thanks. You know, as I've been talking to you, I've been thinking, because I spent a little bit of time in Albany last year. You know, the Senate now, the leadership and a lot of the senior members and even the new members are women.
Yes.
Which is kind of new to Albany. What's it like to be part of that kind of situation?
Of
which
course.
It seems great, by the way.
It is. It's honestly, it's so refreshing. And that was going to be the second part of what I said, is that we are the first class of all female senators that in the history of New York State on the Democratic side that has been elected. So there's six of us, and we really have a very close friendship. You know, we all have different backgrounds, different experiences. Some of us are moms, some of us, we come from so many walks of life. So we all really kind of lean into each other. We have a very good friendship. And, you know, the leader is phenomenal at cultivating those relationships as well. But I have to say, you know, I've actually, believe it or not, I've worked on campaigns of men, but I've only worked for female elected officials. And there is something really special, and they understand the dynamic of what women want, right? Like, we want more childcare. We need more resources. You know, we need more flexibility. I'm working with even Neely Rosick in the assembly side. She's a good friend of mine for many years. And speaking of what we've learned during COVID is that, you know, a lot of what we do, we can do remotely, right? And just giving people those options, a hybrid option. I'm not saying full remote, but giving people a hybrid option will get more parents involved in this process. You know, I was at the MTA very briefly. So we saw it with anytime we did the hearings, you would have a much more robust involvement when there was a virtual option. So people who, whether you're disabled or you're a parent, even myself, you know, all of a sudden I had little kids at home. I was able to join, you know, every single community board meeting and civic meeting because it was on Zoom. My kids were in bed, you know, you didn't have to worry about that childcare. So we have a bill that would require New York State to provide hybrid work options for their employees. And we need to do that because we see a public sector where they are hemorrhaging a workforce. Part of the reason why I left the MTA, frankly, and decided that it was more advantageous to run for office was we were 3 days in, 2 days home, and they said, everybody's coming back. And my department hemorrhaged workers. People were leaving left and right. They went to less secure jobs and tech companies. The guy that I started with, he left, he got a job at Lyft. I decided to run for office and we both started on the same day. So they don't take hiring recommendations from either of us.
But, you know, you raise an interesting point. We can all get in trouble for this next thing. But, you know, Staten Island, people think of New York City as New York City. It's not always easy to do a commute from different parts of the city, especially if you're trying to get to different parts of Manhattan or maybe even the Bronx or Brooklyn or Queens. And so I think people forget sometimes that even a commute within the city can be a real difficult thing.
It really is. And, you know, again, like my experience, you know, if I was doing my job was in front of a computer, right? And, you know, if I had something like a sick kid home from school or something I had to, like a doctor's appointment I had to run to, it didn't make sense to me that I couldn't work from home that day because it would take an hour to get there, an hour to get back. And that's 2 hours out of my workday when usually, frankly, if I'm home and once the kids are on the bus, they're on the bus by 7:30, by 7:31, my laptop's open, you know? So I actually think it will give people peace of mind. It will make people be more productive. And, you know, I just think that when you have a lot of female elected officials, they're bringing that different perspective in, right? What's going to be best for the family unit? What's going to be best for parents who are working, for the kids who are impacted by this? So I see that. And there's so much, you know, there's so much that these women are bringing to the table.
So you've talked a little about this, but moving forward, what are the things you're kind of most excited about trying to push? And
of course.
Done?
So, you know, I always say we have a lot of bills that are surrounded around about public safety, right? You know, when you talk to people, you knock on their door, they care about public safety and they care about affordability. So I always go from the point of view, as far as my legislation goes, is that we need to make people feel safe. So we have legislation that would elevate the assault of a retail worker to a Class D felony. I was really proud. We worked with the governor's team to get it in the executive budget this year. Affordability. Last year, we were able to secure additional money to keep the Verrazano discount the way that it has been. And I also this year joined a lawsuit to stop congestion pricing because to me, it's really an unfair burden for both the Staten Island side of my district and the Coney Island side of my district. It's just something that's so unaffordable. And, you know, this idea that people are getting in their cars and driving to work because they're being lazy or the car culture. I know for myself and for most other Staten Island and Southern Brooklyners, Brooklynites rather, you know, sometimes it's just the fastest way to get home to your family. And that's what people want to do. And it's not like we have the infrastructure in place that's so great. And, you know, then came congestion pricing. We don't even have that infrastructure in place yet. So, you know, I did join the lawsuit. It was with the UFT, with Borough President Bo Fisella, and we have 18 other lawmakers from all different parts of New York State who've joined that as well. So, you know, that's something I always keep my, you know, my focus on is making sure people feel safe and we keep money in their pocket. Kind of excited about the property tax stuff as well. So that should be interesting. If that, you know, moves forward, I know there's a lot more that we need to do and look at, but Staten Islanders and people living in Southern Brooklyn portion of my district will see their property taxes dramatically reduce, which I think is very fair. But some of the other stuff I'm very interested in is maternal health. So, you know, I had mentioned to you I was going to school for nursing. One of the things I actually was trying to do at that time was I wanted to become a nurse to become a certified nurse midwife. In the rest of the modern world, that's actually the midwifery model of care is what is proven to lower maternal mortality rates, have safer outcomes. And, you know, maternal health is something I'm really, really passionate about. And fun fact, there is only one midwifery program in the entire SUNY or CUNY system, and it's at SUNY Downstate. The other programs are at Columbia, they're at NYU. Staten Island had, when I had my son, one midwife working in a hospital, one. So I actually, you know, while I was working for Diane, I was going back for my prerequisites, but then COVID hit and everything kind of took a turn, but I do have my prerequisites finished for nursing school finally. And, so CUNY doesn't have a midwifery program and I really think it should. So we were advocating to get money in the budget this year, and it is in our one house, to create a midwifery program within the CUNY system. We work very closely with Borough President Reynoso, who also is very passionate about this, because maternal health, we should not have the outcomes that we have in a state like New York or a country like the United States, frankly. We need to start talking. And I think we've made great strides in, you know, getting doulas into hospital rooms and making people aware. It's very refreshing. I come to Albany and I'm like, wow, people know what a doula is. This is great. But the next thing I want to burn into everybody's brains, the way that word is burned into everybody's brains is midwifery. So we are trying really hard to start a midwifery program within the CUNY system. It would be the first midwifery program in the CUNY system. So we did get in our one house, and I will continue to bother everybody to hope we get it in the final budget.
Well, it's interesting you mention it, and given your background in studying nursing, you know, we do have a nursing shortage
yep.
in New York State. And I know at SUNY, where I'm sitting now, you know, even some of the things like simulation yep. in nursing, and I know the legislature took some action on that, it, you know, things that would help increase the supply of nurses in New York State, because, you know, after COVID, that's another thing that came out of COVID was the effect it had on the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell you a quick story of how ridiculous this is. We have a nursing shortage in New York State, right? Particularly after COVID, it's a huge problem. January 2020, my prerequisites were done and I was ready to get into a nursing program. But the investments within CUNY are not high enough, or they need to be significantly more. In my opinion, we should have some kind of nursing corps, right? You know, recruiting people who want to go into the healthcare industries, because the seats are very, very limited. They don't have a lot of programs for working people. BMCC is one school I know of that has a program that's at night and on the weekends. They have a very limited capacity for who they can accept. I think they accept like 30 or 40 people, you know, a year. into that program. College of Staten Island has an amazing nursing program. But again, nursing a lot of times is a career that people will go back to. And, you know, it'll be a secondary career. And we need more programs, I think, within CUNY and SUNY that are tailored around working people. Because most people, I know I couldn't. I got into the College of Staten Island nursing program, right? I couldn't do clinicals at 12 in the afternoon. I had a job, full-time job. And, you know, I make sure that as much every time this comes up, I bring it up to, you know, I talk with NYSNA, who's amazing. I talk with them all the time. It's very difficult to recruit professors within these universities, but it's also a lack of investment. So, you know, that's something that I constantly bring up both to the CUNY system, to the SUNY system, with NYSNA, and of course, in conference.
Thank you, Senator. Listen, Senator, thank you for all the time you've spent with us. Anything you want to close with that's important?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm really proud of the work that we're doing. I'm proud of the team that we have. You know, I got a message today from somebody that said, I've never dealt with an office that's been more responsive. And to me, that is just all I ever need to hear. I always keep my mind focused on the fact that constituent services is first and foremost the most important piece of this job, making sure that the people of Staten Island, Southern Brooklyn have what they need in a time where they're very desperate. If they're calling our office, whether it's unemployment, you know, a housing issue, we want people to know that we're there for them. And most importantly, I really enjoyed doing this with you today. So thank you.
No, thank you, Senator.
Thanks again to Senator Jessica Scarcella Spanton for joining us on Policy Outsider and sharing more about her experience as a public servant. Stay tuned with new episodes of Policy Outsider as we continue to interview recently elected legislators to provide more insight into how they approach serving their constituents and setting state policy. Policy Outsider is presented by the Rockefeller Institute of Government, the public policy research arm of the State University of New York. The Institute conducts cutting-edge, nonpartisan public policy research and analysis to inform lasting solutions to the challenges facing New York State and the nation. Learn more at rockinst.org or by following Rockefeller Inst, that's I-N-S-T, on social media. Have a question, comment, or idea? Email us at communications@rock.suny.edu.